A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet, Turner. White scrolling text appears on a gray background. Forward. Perhaps the toughest of the gangster films, Public Enemy and Little Caesar, had a great effect on public opinion. They brought home violently the evils associated with Prohibition and suggested the necessity of a nationwide house cleaning. Tom Powers in Public Enemy and Rico in Little Caesar are not two men, nor are they merely characters. They are a problem that sooner or later, we the public must solve. Titles appear on a stonewall background. Warner Brothers Pictures Incorporated and the Vitaphone Corporation present The Public Enemy by Kubik Glassman and John Bright. Directed by William A. Wellman. Screen adaptation by Harvey Thu. Photography by Dev Jennings. Art director Max Parker. Edited by Edward M. McDermott. Vitaphone Orchestra conducted by David Mendoza. Brunswick Radios used exclusively. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service at WGBH. Described by Carrie Danahy and Paula Broussard. Read by Miles Neff. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. James Cagney as Tom Powers. Tom punches the air lightly with his fist. Jean Harlow as Gwen Allen. Gwen winks at us, her chin dotted with a beauty mark. Edward Woods as Matt Doyle. Matt wipes his nose with the back of his hand. Joan Blondell as Mamie. Mamie grins in a low-cut gown. Donald Cook as Mike Powers. Mike stares in a conductor's uniform. Leslie Fenton as Nails Nathan. Nails wears a suit and ascot. He chews gum. Beryl Mercer as Ma Powers. Ma smiles shyly. Robert O'Connor as Patty Ryan. Patty smokes a cigar and wears a derby hat. Murray Cannell as Putty Nose. Putty Nose chalks a pool cue. Forward. It is the ambition of the authors of The Public Enemy to honestly depict an environment that exists today in a certain strata of American life, rather than glorify the hoodlum or the criminal. While the story of The Public Enemy is essentially a true story, all names and characters appearing herein are purely fictional. A large title appears, 1909. Now, in black and white film, pedestrians stream across a busy intersection. Buggy-like motor cars sit parked along each side of the city street. A police officer directs traffic and waves on a horse-drawn omnibus. Elsewhere, an electric trolley drives past. Dozens of cars, some with their tops down, roll slowly along a paved avenue. Now, the fences in a slaughterhouse yard make a grid of small square pens filled with cattle. Bursts of steam escape from a factory whistle. Men in long coats walk a dirt lane inset with train tracks. On another street lined with houses and bare trees, two children ride tricycles. In a saloon, men fill glass mugs and tin pails with beer from a tap. Outside, a horse-drawn wagon laden with wooden kegs passes through a brewing company's gates. Two workmen sit at the reins, shielded by a large umbrella. The wagon turns past a bar advertising 5-cent mugs of beer. An old man smoking a pipe crosses the street behind them. As the old man hobbles along, another horse-drawn wagon crosses his path, then a lanky boy selling newspapers. On the corner in front of a saloon, a man with a wide-brimmed hat exits. He carries a narrow board that has 6 buckets hanging from it. 3 on each side of his grip. As the man crosses the street, he passes by another pub with matching beer mug signs on either side of the entrance. Schultz's Special Brew. Now, a small Salvation Army band marches past. As the band files by the saloon, they pass a door labeled Family Entrance. 2 12-year-old boys wearing caps and knickers exit. The dark-haired boy carries a tin bucket. His taller friend nudges him.
Just a swig.
The shorter boy hands his friend the bucket. As the tall one blows off the foam and takes a gulp, 2 girls approach.
Come on, Tom. Hello?
Tom wipes his mouth. His friend looks in the girl's pail.
Hand greed? Come on, Matt. We got business. Give us a little kiss, huh?
Matt tries to follow the girls inside, but gets hit by the swinging door.
That's what you get for fooling with women.
Later, Matt and Tom run through a department store as a clerk chases after them.
Hey, boy, stop. Stop, I say. Stop that.
The boys run up an escalator. Two fat ladies get on behind them, making it impossible for the clerk to pass. The boys wave tauntingly at the clerk. As they reach the upper floor, a policeman steps off an elevator in front of them. The boys slide down the wide metal slope between the up and down escalators. As Matt slides down, he slaps off a man's top hat. Later, a girl roller skates awkwardly on a wooden sidewalk. Ahead of her, the boys lie on the ground. Tom holds a string between the cracks in the sidewalk. He lifts the string.
That ain't fair, Tom. What do you care? It's only a girl. She's my sister, ain't she? What difference does that make?
The girl falls.
Hold me up, Matt.
Leave her alone. She's doing fine. That's the way to learn.
As the girl skates by, Tom lifts the string. She falls.
That's just like you, Tom Powers. You're the meanest boy in town.
Is not. He gave you the skates, didn't he?
I believe he did it just so he could play that trick on me. I'm going to tell your brother Mike.
I'll go ahead and tell him. Here he comes now.
You'll help me, won't you, Mike?
Where'd you get the skates, Molly?
Tom gave them to me.
Tom did? Where'd you get them, Tom?
He got them from a kid who owed him some money.
I'll bet you stole them, Tom. Give them back, Molly. I say, why don't you mind your own business? Nobody asked you to put your 2 cents in.
Here, Tom, I don't want them if you stole them.
Oh, so you're getting like Sissy Mike, too.
Take them, Tom.
Say, you ain't so darn good. Your old man swipes pigeons.
Tom Coward, he does not. You're a big liar.
Well, he's in jail, Annie. They don't put people there for nothing.
Everybody who belongs there ain't there. That's where you'll be someday, Tom Powers.
Well, I ain't there yet. If I do go, it won't be for swiping pigeons.
Tom's and Mike's father glares from the porch wearing a policeman's domed hat. As Tom turns toward the house, he freezes, his gaze fixed on the grim-faced officer.
Tell him you were only kidding, Tom!
Matt calls after him. Later, inside, Mr. Powers walks into the kitchen where Tom's ma washes dishes. He grabs a leather strap hanging on the wall, pulls on it with both hands, and gives it a snap. Tom's ma watches disappointedly. Upstairs, her husband walks the boy down the hallway into a bedroom. As Tom's father sits on the edge of the bed, the boy gives a defiant tug on the waist of his britches.
How do you want him this time? Up or down?
His father grabs him by the arm and throws him over his lap. Tom clutches the bed's metal footboard and grimaces. As he winces, his cap falls off his head. Later, Tom and Matt approach a small storefront. A tattered awning is painted with the words, Red Oaks Club. The boys look around cautiously as they step closer. Reaching the door, they turn and scan the littered street. Tom holds on to something stuffed under his shirt. He motions to Matt by slightly jerking his head back. Matt wipes his nose on the back of his hand and returns the nod. They enter. Inside, an old man smoking a cigarette plays cards with 4 boys. Tom and Matt wave to him.
Hello there.
How's it going?
How are you? Did you? There you are.
Several other boys sit on a sofa in front of a piano. Putty Nose plays the piano and sings.
Lizzie Jones, big and fat, slipped on the ice and broke her.
Putty Nose spots Tom and Matt. Tom motions to him with a jerk of his head, and Putty Nose gets up.
All right. I'll be back in a minute, boys. I'll be back in a minute.
Well, boys, what's up?
Tom and Matt follow Putty Nose into an adjoining room. Tom waits for Matt to close the door, then lifts up his shirt. He pulls out a display placard decorated with 6 brand new pocket watches.
Where'd you get them?
Wentworth Avenue. How much are they worth?
Not much. Just cheap watches.
Cheap watches? $1 a piece.
Yeah, and there's 6 of them, too.
I don't know what I can do with them. They're hot.
Oh, come on, quit stalling, Putty Nose. You know how to sell them.
You're too smart. Well, I'll see what I can do with them.
How much do we get?
Oh, what do you say to half a buck for each of you.
Half a buck?
But I ain't cheating you, Tom. That's a good price. I have to take all the risk, and maybe I can't sell them at all.
Give us the half a buck.
You know old Putty Nose always played on the square with you, don't you?
Hey, this is only two bits.
Yeah, and this is only a nickel.
Oh, my mistake.
Yeah.
Sorry. And then you see, you're both only a month's dues to the club, don't you?
That's right, Tom.
Yeah, so we're calling that square, see? That's all right, isn't it?
Sure.
You've done a good stroke of business. And if you find anything more, you just remember old Putty Nose, won't you?
Okay.
A large title appears, 1915. A teenage Tom and Matt approach the same storefront, which is now clean and well painted. A wooden sign reads, Red Oak Social Club. As the young men approach the door, they look around. Tom has a tight mouth and a steep sloped nose. He spits and pushes his cap forward. The boyish Matt wipes his nose with the back of his hand. Inside, a man smoking a cigarette nods, directing the pair past the bar. In a back room, Putty Nose plays pool with three men.
What do we want with a couple of young squares like them for?
Well, they ain't gonna be so bad.
They won't expect much of a cut.
Tom and Matt enter.
Hey there, Tom.
Hello, Putty Nose.
Hello, boy.
Are you alone? I'm always alone when I'm with Matt.
Are you looking for a sack on the button?
I was afraid you might have brought Mike with you. Sucker. He's too busy going to school. He's learning how to be poor. Huh. Ain't he working on the streetcars anymore?
Sure. He's a ding-ding in the daytime. Goes to school at night.
What do you want us for, Putty?
Putty keeps shooting pool.
Something sweet.
Remember how I always said,
got something good, I'd cut you in.
Tom and Matt look at each other.
Yeah?
Well?
Putty Nose points behind him, beckoning to Tom, Matt, and the three men. Tom and Matt trade another glance, then follow. Later, in a bedroom, they all meet.
Now, Dutch here knows the whole layout. We've been casing the joint for a whole week. How about the cops?
You ain't afraid of cops?
There ain't gonna be no trouble. And if there is, I promise you that I'll protect you. Now, Limpy here will be lookout. The place is dead at night anyhow. Well, are you on?
Well, we ain't never done nothing so big.
Big? Big is right. I'm giving you a break like I promised. Furs is worth plenty nowadays.
Well, how about you, Tom?
It's kind of new stuff on me.
Well, you gotta grow up sometime. Wait a minute.
Tom and Matt watch with interest.
Christmas present from Santa Claus.
He hands them revolvers.
With best wishes for a prosperous new year.
They glance at each other and examine their new guns. Smiling, Matt lifts his up and peers down the barrel ready to shoot. The guys smile at each other, then up at Putty Nose, who pats Matt on the shoulder. Nighttime. On a small street, a delivery truck pulls to a stop by a loading dock. A sign over an archway reads, Northwestern Fur Trading Company. One of Putty Nose's men unlocks the back of the truck and four more men climb out, including Tom and Matt. Tom stands on the loading dock and takes a look around. Matt approaches him.
Gee, I'm scared stiff. Come on, I'm not going to be scared of you. That's so. Look at you. You're shaking yourself.
Tom threatens to give Matt a slap, then motions toward the building. The pair walks off as one man stays behind, pretending to fix a flat tire. Inside, the men shine a flashlight on dozens of furs piled on the floor and hung on racks. Matt shines the light in Tom's face, and he squints.
Take it away, will you?
Matt aims the light on a tall rack of various furs that dangle from wire hangers. Tom reaches up and slides the furs apart. A huge taxidermy bear towers over them. Tom pulls out his gun. Two of the robbers run off. The lookout drops his lug nut wrench. Tom and Matt climb out of a window. As the lookout dashes down the street, a police officer follows.
Stop!
The officer shoots him in the back, and he falls to the ground. Tom and Matt look on from a roof.
They got Limpy Larry.
As Tom and Matt open a nearby door, they see a shadow of a man on the inner wall. The two men flee back across the roof to an adjacent building and slide down a lamppost. The officer spots them as they reach the ground. He runs after them through the thick gun smoke. The guys run down an alleyway with the cop close behind. As the officer follows them into the shadows, bright flashes of gunfire break the darkness. Tom and Matt step from the shadows and toss their guns over a wall. On the ground, the policeman's domed hat lies next to his motionless arm, his smoking gun still clutched in his hand. Later, Tom and Matt cautiously approach a door.
Hurry! Hurry, no!
A square peephole slides open.
Wait, Putty, we knocked off a...
Yeah, I know all about it. Putty knows, beat it. You better lay low for a while. The heat's on.
But Putty knows got us into this. He promised to see us through.
Why, that dirty, no-good, yellow-bellied stool. I'm going to give it that Putty nose right in the head the first time I see him.
Yeah, you and who else?
As the man shuts the peephole, Tom punches it in. The guys look at each other nervously, then walk off. Now in a parlor, Ma Powers comforts a plump older woman who sobs by several potted palms and a coffin.
Oh, my Larry. He was a good boy.
In another room, four men drink beer.
Larry got what he asked for. I warned him. He was a no good boy.
They raise their glass beer mugs.
Oh, my daddy was a good boy.
He got into bad company, that's all. Oh, come here, Tommy boy. I'm so glad you came, Tommy. Mrs. Dalton will be pleased to see some of Larry's nice affairs.
Tom and Matt give each other a knowing glance. Ma takes Tom's hand and puts it in Mrs. Dalton's. Wearing their Sunday best, Tom and Matt crane their necks and peer over the women into the open casket. Now, a large title appears, 1917. People crowd a street as a newsboy holds up a paper. A headline in capital letters reads, U.S. declares war. Wearing capy hats, Tom and Matt pull up to the curb in a truck. Matt starts to get out, then sits back down. They sink down in their seats. Mike and a young woman walk down the street arm in arm.
Come on home with me, Molly. I don't know just how to tell mom.
All right, Mike.
As the couple walks by, Tom and Matt step out of the truck.
That sister of yours ain't getting any bargain on Mike.
Hey, how come he ain't working?
I guess he got fired for snatching too many nickels.
Hey, they look like something's happened.
Come on, we gotta see Patty.
In a bar.
You don't need to stall with Patty Ryan, Tom. I've been watching you ever since you bought your first drink from me. I know what you've been doing.
You see, Patty's like this. We delivered some cigars today. Was your worth about $2,500. Took them to a place on 63rd and was told to put them on the back. We could lift them easy tonight, but we don't know what to do with them.
Patty strikes a match, lights a cigar, and puffs on it.
You sell cigars, don't you?
Patty blows out the match and nods.
Not that kind. Can't afford it. I've got my own system, boys, but being a fence ain't part of it.
Well, we thought maybe you might know somebody.
Maybe I do.
Patty motions to them, and they lean in close over the bar. He whispers in Tom's ear.
Yeah?
You might take him there. I'll call up and say you're coming.
Thanks, Patty.
Matt shakes Patty's hand, and the boys start to leave.
Wait a minute.
They stop at the end of the bar, and Patty walks over as he puffs on his cigar.
You're getting a jam. Give me a ring. You'll find out Patty Ryan's your friend.
Thanks, Patty. Why do you want a front for us? We ain't ever done nothing for you.
Maybe not. I may need to find myself sometime. I'm older than you, and I've learned that nobody can do much without somebody else. Remember this, boys. You gotta have friends. I've been watching you and hearing about you, and I've been worried. I was worried when you got mixed up with that two-timer Putty Nose. Such guys are dangerous.
Patty turns his head and spits. Tom winks at him.
I'm glad you come to me. As far as Patty Ryan's concerned, there are only two kinds of people. Right and wrong. Now, I think you're right. You'll find that I am. Unless you cross me.
Tom smiles at him, turns his head, and spits. Standing up straight, he gives Patty a friendly punch in the arm.
That's swell.
The guys walk out. Now, in a dining room, Molly consoles Ma Powers.
Everything will be all right.
Ma's face is buried in her folded hands. Molly pats her shoulder. Tom strides in.
Hello, Ma.
Tommy. Oh, Tommy boy. You won't leave me, will you, Tommy? You're all I've got left. Oh, Tommy boy.
What's the matter, Ma? What's up?
Mike's enlisted.
Enlisted? In the Army?
In the Marine.
But you won't go, Tommy. Promise me you won't go. You're just a baby.
Oh, now, listen, Ma.
If your pa was alive, I wouldn't care so much. Promise me, Tommy.
I won't go, Ma. When's he going?
As soon as he gets his call. He's up packing now.
Ma presses her face in Tom's chest.
Go up and see him, Tommy. We ought to be very proud of him.
Tom smiles at his mother and gently knocks her shoulder with his fist. He heads upstairs. In his bedroom, Mike packs a suitcase.
Hello, Mike.
Well, hello, Tom. I'm glad you came. I suppose you've heard.
Yeah, kind of rushing it, ain't you?
Well, Tom, when your country needs you, she needs you.
Yeah.
Tom sits on the edge of the bed.
I suppose you think I ought to go, too.
No. Maybe it was selfish of me, Tom, but somebody's got to stay here and take care of Ma. You earn more money than I do, and they'd have called me first anyway.
You always did get all the breaks.
Don't take it like that, Tom. You got to be the man of the family now.
Tom looks up at Mike, then gloomily leans his head on the bedpost.
Well, and while we're on the subject, I wish you'd try to stay home a little more.
I gotta work, ain't I?
Oh, sure.
Mike closes the bedroom door. He faces Tom.
Listen, Tom, I was in a place today and I heard somebody say something.
What of it?
Well, they were saying... It seemed as though they were pointing a finger at you and Matt.
Who was? What, Roger said anything about me?
Now, take it easy.
You're always hearing things. You'll get too much in your nose someday and you wonder how you got it.
Well, for crying out loud. I heard a couple of guys talking about you. As much as to say you were in on some crooked work. What am I supposed to do, run?
Well, you ain't asking me. You're telling me. And I don't know a thing, see?
All I've got to say, Tom, is that you've got a good job now. You don't need these rats you're running around with.
Oh, I suppose you want me to go to night school and read poems. I've been hearing a few things myself.
There's nothing to hear about me.
That's all you know. You ain't so smart. Books and all that stuff don't hide everything.
You're a liar, Tom. You're covering up.
Covering up? For what? For you? Oh, you're nothing but a sneak thief.
What did you say?
You heard me, a petty larceny sneak thief, a nickel snatcher, robbing a streetcar company.
Mike slugs him and Tom falls onto a chair, breaking it. Tom lies on the floor, holding his face as Mike walks out. Tom shakes his head and slowly gets to his feet, his wavy bangs dangling. He runs his fingers through his hair and pushes it back. His eyes shift and his mouth tightens. He looks to the door and kicks it shut, then continues kicking it. A large title appears, 1920. Words painted on a large glass window read Family Liquor Store. Owing to prohibition, our entire stock must be sold before midnight. Inside, two clerks frantically remove liquor bottles from the shelves. Bustling people fill the street, throwing confetti. At the liquor store, customers stream out, their arms wrapped around bottles and plain paper bags. A man blowing a toy horn stumbles and drops his bag. The liquor puddles on the sidewalk. A gentleman in a top hat passes an armful of bags into a car window. As he walks away, the top bag rolls off. An elegantly dressed woman gets out of the car and sifts through the pieces. Now, a large florist truck stops by the store, and two men open the back doors. One tosses large baskets of flowers onto the street as the other loads the truck with booze. A woman walks down the sidewalk holding a baby. Next to her, a man pushes a carriage brimming with liquor bottles. Now, Matt, Tom, and Patty drink coffee together.
Don't you think that booze ain't going to be valuable? I heard today that alcohol's gone to $30 a gallon.
Patty shoves two handfuls of potato chips into his mouth.
A real McCoy's hard to get.
He looks at the two guys.
All you gotta do when you deliver a good shipment is size up the layout and let me know. I can use some of it.
He shoves more chips into his mouth.
I know two or three others that'll buy all that I can't handle. It means real dough. A three-way split. I said we'd get together sometime, didn't I? Well, the time has come. Now.
Daytime. A gasoline tanker truck drives toward a building marked U.S. Bonded Warehouse. Two men watch the truck. One has a long rubber hose coiled over his shoulder. The men nod to each other and climb a nearby telephone pole. At the parked truck, Matt walks around to the back, and Tom leans out the window.
Grab the rope. One jug to start and two to stop. Yeah.
Tom gets out of the truck. As Matt climbs up on the tank, the two other men reach the top of the telephone pole and step onto the warehouse roof. Below, Matt unscrews a cap on the roof of the tank. Inside the warehouse, the walls are stacked high with large wooden barrels. A pair of legs dangles from the ceiling, and one of the men drops down on a neat row of crates in the middle of the room. As he grabs the rubber hose and hops down, the other man drops from the ceiling. The men stretch out the long hose. One takes an end, pulls it toward the far wall, and opens a window. He looks down and feeds the hose out the window as the other removes a mallet from his tool belt and pounds a tap into a nearby keg. Outside, Tom leans on the truck's hood and looks up, then over his shoulder. Back in the warehouse, one man attaches the hose to the tap as the other works the hose out the window. Atop the tanker, Matt now finds the hose and a rope in the opening of a wall-mounted downspout. He takes the end, feeds it into the tank, and gives the rope a tug. The man by the warehouse window signals to the other with a wave of his arm. His partner turns on the tap. Now, by the truck's open hood, Tom leans over the engine. Matt casually sits down on the tanker's roof. Later, the two men inside stand motionless. The hose now siphons from a barrel on the opposite wall. Matt looks down inside the tank, then over at Tom. Tom looks up. Matt points to the tank and nods, then gives the rope two tugs. Inside, the man by the window waves his arm and the other turns off the tap. Matt screws the cap back onto the tanker and the hose and rope are drawn back up the downspout. Tom gets in the driver's seat as Matt climbs back into the cab. They drive off. Later, Tom, Patty, and Matt sit at a small table. Patty counts out money as a waiter brings in a tray of filled shot glasses.
Thanks, honey.
Tom imitates the waiter's mouth antics. The waiter wags a finger at Tom and leaves. Patty hands them each a thin stack of bills.
Yeah. Are you satisfied?
I'll say.
They count the money.
Pretty soft, wasn't it? How do you like playing with Patty?
I wonder what to do with so much dough.
Ah, you ain't started.
I'll make big shots out of you yet.
Anything you say goes to me, Patty.
Me too.
And here's to us.
They all raise a shot glass and drink. Later, at a haberdashery, Matt watches a tailor measure Tom's waist.
31 and a half.
31 and a half.
Don't forget, plenty of room in there.
Oh, sir.
Tom pulls on his waistband.
Did you read about that big robbery at the Booze warehouse? 42 and a half.
42 and a half.
Right under their very noses.
Yeah, a guy was just telling me about it.
All through now, gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you.
Don't forget what I told you. Plenty of room right there.
Yes.
Yeah, and remember, 6 buttons.
Matt
six
points
buttons.
To his cuff.
Be careful, Matt, or you're going to cut the nose right off you.
Tom mockingly wipes his nose with the back of his hand. As the tailor laughs, Tom snubs him with a sour look. Later, at night, Tom and Matt pull in front of a club in a sparkling convertible. A black doorman greets them.
Well, well, today Mr. Tom and Mr. Matt.
Hello, George. How's business?
Big night.
They get out of the car. As a valet gets in, Matt polishes a headlight and Tom inspects the large winged hood ornament.
Hey, Stoop, that's got gears. That ain't no Ford.
Okay, Paul.
Tom and Matt watch as the valet slowly drives off in their luxury car. Inside the club, couples dance to a live band as others of mixed race chat at small tables. Tom and Matt enter. They check their hats and overcoats at a counter and scan the room. Both of them wear a three-piece suit. A black maitre d' approaches.
Ah, Mr. Powers, Mr. Doyle. Alone as usual?
I am. Matt's all fixed up. He's got me with him.
Well, the night's young yet. You'll wind up with something.
Yeah, well, a morning paper.
As they walk through the club, Matt nudges Tom. He points at two women sitting with a couple of sleeping men. A sandy-haired woman looks at their passed-out dates, then at her platinum blonde friend.
Couple of lightweights. Yeah, flat tires.
The blonde's gaze fixes in Matt's and Tom's direction, and her face brightens. She nudges her friend. Matt winks at the ladies and grins. Tom stares. The sandy-haired woman gives a little wave and smiles coyly. The lighter blonde strides over in a smart white-trimmed dress and cloche hat. She puts her arm over Matt's shoulder and they dance away. Tom signals for the maitre d'.
Listen, why don't you send them two smack-offs home to their mothers? They're no good to the joint anymore.
And the ladies, too?
He lightly punches him.
Don't be silly.
The maitre d' nods his head at two bouncers standing against the wall. He and Tom exchange a wide grin. On the dance floor, Matt and the blonde separate and smile at each other.
How about something with ice in it?
Well, we're with friends.
Matt watches as the bouncers carry the girls' drunk dates away from the table, leaving the sandy-haired woman by herself.
Yeah, I know it. I'm one of them.
As they stride off together, Tom sits next to the sandy-haired woman.
Hello, baby. What are you going to have?
Anything you say, big boy.
He looks her over.
You're a swell dish. I think I'm going to go for you.
Yeah?
Hey, Tom, look at what I got measured for. I don't even know you're here.
As Matt and his new date join them, Tom snuggles close to his girl and whispers in her ear. She pulls away and gives him a shocked look. He smiles.
Come on.
He playfully jabs her chin. Now, Patty sits in his office with another man.
Then it's a deal. If you can assure me my name will be protected.
You'll be protected all over the place.
Tom and Matt walk in.
Hello, boys.
They wear truck driver uniforms.
You can take off those clothes. You got new jobs.
Tom looks at Matt, then at Patty.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He pulls up a chair.
First meet Mr. Lehman.
Matt and Tom shake his hand.
These are the two lads I was telling you about.
Tom wipes off his hand with the other.
Sit down, boys.
They sit, and Tom pours Matt a shot. Patty puffs on his cigar.
How do you like the brewery business?
We don't know nothing about it.
You will.
You're in it now.
Yeah?
Mr. Lehman and I got it all fixed. You see, Mr. Lehman owns that big brewery over on Union Avenue.
Tom stands and shakes Mr. Lehman's hand again, smiling.
But that's been closed since.
Yeah. Going to open up.
You spoke of a rather remarkable man from the West Side.
Yeah. Nails Nathan.
Tom's eyes widen.
Patty, is Nails throwing it with us?
He'll be here any minute.
Wow.
I don't believe I'm acquainted with the gentleman.
And you're the only man in town that ain't. At least everybody's heard of him, hey, boys?
Tom nods in agreement. Patty leans forward.
Believe me, Mr. Lehman, when Nails, Nathan, and his mob start on a job, it's already done. Beamer Burns' crowd tries to muscle in on us.
He leans back.
I pity him.
You understand, of course, that my desire is merely to furnish a better grade of beer than the working man can now obtain under the present, unfortunate...
Eh?
A sharply dressed man enters. Tom and Matt stand on each side of him.
I've heard that north wind blow before. If you're in this, you're in for the coin, same as all the rest of us.
Gentlemen, meet Nails Nathan.
Vaughn Samuel. Tom Powers. Glad to know you. And you're Matt Doyle.
Yeah.
How are you? Sit down, fellas.
How'd you know?
Know all about you. Patty here has been talking.
Meet Mr. Lehman, Nails.
Tickle pink. Don't take offense at anything I say, Mr. Lehman. But if we're in this racket together, we got to keep the cheaters off, right?
My name is not to appear.
Oh, don't worry. We won't use it in our advertising. Well, Patty, the mob's all ready by the time you can open. Got some swell routes laid out for you, and the stock's all marked.
You mean you have the customers all signed up?
Signed up? Yes, sir. Signed up or sailed up. And Tom and Matt here is the official signers and sailors. The trouble squad.
Yeah, and if they need any help, Nails has got some pretty handy boys with their gloves all Earl.
Dear me, I'm afraid this means...
It means they buy our beer or they don't buy any beer.
Nails glares at him. Later, outside the Lehman Brewing Company, Matt and Tom lean against their fancy car as Nails oversees some workers.
All right, Dutch, get going. And listen, don't take any back talk from those speakies. Just tell them, here's the beer you ordered. If they doubt you, call Matt and Tom. All right, Matt, Tom, get going.
Matt and Tom get into their car. Another driver starts up a truck whose stacked cargo is covered with a tarp. As several workers roll kegs over to a second truck, the guys follow the first out of the gated brewery lot and onto the street. Now, Tom and Matt enter a saloon. A single patron sits at the end of the marble counter talking to an aproned bartender.
Hello, Steve. How's business?
Business is on the bump.
Dutch was telling us you only took 2 kegs of beer last trip, and now you don't want any at all.
Well, business is on the bump.
Well, give us a couple of beers. That'll help a little.
The bartender gives them 2 mugs filled with beer. Tom inspects it, and they both take a sip. Tom spits the beer into the bartender's face.
That ain't our beer. Where'd you get the slops?
Well, it's good, ain't it? And it's cheaper than yours.
How much you pay for this stuff?
The patron answers.
2 bits of glass.
All right, screw.
The man leaves.
I thought so. You can sell ours for the same price.
Tom walks behind the bar and pulls down the levers on all of the taps. Beer pours out onto the floor. As the bartender tries to push one of the taps closed, Tom shoves him against the back of the bar.
Hey, somebody's got to protect your customers.
But what am I going to do? I can't help it if I have to buy from Schemer Burns. They tell me the same thing that you do.
You're yellow.
Tom slaps his cheeks, then his nose.
Oh, please, you ain't going to slug me, are you?
Maybe not today. But I'm telling you this for the last time. When Dutch comes around, he's going to leave you some beer. And you're going to take it. And you're going to kick him with the dough. If you don't, somebody's going to drop by here and kick your teeth out one at a time. Get me?
Yeah, and you'll be needing some right away. How many shall we leave?
Oh, two kegs.
You hear that, Dutch? Bring in 5 kegs.
Now, in Ma Power's living room, Molly reads a card on a large floral arrangement.
Mr. and Mrs. Patrick J. Ryan.
She steps over to a basket of flowers and reads its card.
Mr. and Mrs. Bernard Grogan.
She turns to a huge floral arrangement in the shape of an American flag.
Welcome home, Michael Powers.
She bends down and looks at the card.
Samuel Nathan.
Mike turns to a visiting policeman.
Samuel Nathan. I never heard of him.
Nails Nathan. One of Tom's new friends.
What's Tom doing now, Pat? Mother said something about a political job.
Yeah? And that ain't all. He and Matt have been running around with a couple of girls at the Washington Arms Hotel. Well, now, the worst part of it all is that he's been lying to his mother. He's letting her think that he's made an honest success. Why, sure, it's only a question of time when he's going to be caught. And then he'll be after breaking her poor heart.
But what's he doing?
Beer. Bootleg. He's one of Paddy Ryan's gang. But that's not all. Sure, they stop at nothing. You either take their beer or they put you on the spot. Ah, oh, I tell you, Michael, it's a wicked business. Wait, only last week.
Now, Tom and Matt carry a wooden keg into the dining room.
Got it? Yeah, I got it.
Tom puts a pot upside down on the table, and they set the keg on top of it as Ma looks on.
That's nice of you, Tommy, but I don't think Mike will be able to drink any.
It's the best beer in town. It'll do him good.
Ma walks to the living room and smiles at her returned son.
Dinner's all ready, Michael. Shall I help you in?
No, Mother. I can make it.
Well, I'll be getting along. I'll see us all later.
The officer leaves.
Bye-bye.
As Ma takes Mike's hand, Molly follows them to the dining room. At dinner, the large keg stands prominently in the middle of the table. As the family eats, Ma peers around the keg at Mike, who sits at the opposite end. Mike frowns at the keg, his brow furrowed.
How's the meat, Mikey?
Mike breaks off his grim stare.
Well, fine, Ma.
Ma eyes his plate, then gives a faint smile.
I wish you'd eat more. Try some of this cabbage.
I've had plenty, Ma.
Ma slowly puts the dish of cabbage back on the table. Tom and Matt both notice his eyes locked on the keg. Matt puts down his fork.
Say, we haven't drunk to your health yet. This is a swell celebration.
Matt reaches over to the keg with an empty glass and returns it to Mike full of beer.
There you are, Mike.
He fills another glass halfway. Mike glares at the spigot.
It's enough for you, Ma.
Put ahead on that, will you?
He draws another as Mike continues to scowl.
Mr. Powers?
He puts his own glass under the spigot with Mike's glare still locked on the keg. Matt lifts his glass.
Well, here's to you, Mike.
Ma Powers smiles and raises her glass. Tom shoots a sidelong glance at Mike and downs his own. Mike's brow furrows and he sits frozen in thought, his eyes pinned to the keg.
Why don't you drink, Mike?
Come on, it's only beer. I don't want any, Matt.
Tom sneers at Mike.
What's eating you?
Yeah, I'm not interfering with your drinking. If you want to drink it, go on. If I don't want to, I don't have to.
Mike returns his gaze to the keg. Matt glances at Tom, who breaks into a grin and holds up his glass of beer.
So beer ain't good enough for you, huh?
Mike springs to his feet.
You think I'd care if it was just beer in that keg? I know what's in it. I know what you've been doing all this time. How you got those clothes and those new cars. You've been telling Ma you've gone into politics. That you're on the city payroll. Pat Burke told me everything. You murderers! There's not only beer in that keg. There's beer and blood. Blood of men!
Trembling, he picks up the keg and hurls it into a table, which collapses. Flower vases shatter and drop to the floor. Mike sinks into his chair. Tom looks at him smugly, then stands to leave.
You ain't changed a bit. Besides, your hands ain't so clean. You killed and liked it. You didn't get them medals by holding hands with them Germans.
Oh, please, Tommy, he ain't himself. He don't know what he's talking about. This trip's been too much for the poor soul. Lord, have pity on him. Oh, please, Tommy.
Come on, Matt. Let's get out of here before I go screwy, too.
Oh, don't go away, Tommy. Don't be angry.
You can send my clothes to the Washington Arms Hotel.
Ma's head drops as Tom and Matt walk out. Later, at the Washington Arms, Kitty, the sandy-haired woman from the club, answers the phone. She wears silky, loose-fitting pants and a pale satiny blouse with short sleeves trimmed in fur. It's Nails on the phone calling from a stable.
Hello?
Hello, is Tom there? Well, I just called his apartment. They said he stepped across the hall for breakfast. Nails Nathan.
Oh, just a minute. Tom, it's for you.
How is it?
Nails Nathan.
Kitty puts the phone down and Tom walks over, his hair tousled. He wears striped pajamas. He lifts the phone to his ear and turns away before speaking.
Hello, kid.
Hello, Tom. What's the matter, kid?
Nothing.
Only this game is beginning to get on my nerves, that's all.
Kitty listens from a breakfast table. Her eyes shift.
Listen, I'm getting fed up on these rubber checks bouncing in. We're laying down good beer and getting nothing but a lot of bum paper. I got one this morning for $1,200 from that Pete over on Kedzie Avenue. Get over there. I want the dough. Cash or he's hot. If you can't bring in one, bring in the other.
I'll bring you a boat. You leave it to me, kid. All right. Come on, Matt. Shake a leg. Nails wants us to do him a favor.
Oh, in a minute.
Tom shuffles over to Kitty, waiting at the table.
It's all ready, Tom.
Ain't you got a drink in the house?
Well, not before breakfast, dear.
I didn't ask you for any lip. I asked you if you had a drink.
I know, Tom, but... I wish that...
Hey, you go down wishing stuff again. I wish you was a wishing well. So that I could tie a bucket to you and sink you.
Kitty's mouth tightens.
Maybe you found someone you like better.
Tom's face twists. Grabbing a grapefruit half on Kitty's plate, he jams it in her face. He stomps off as Kitty holds her hands against her cheek, her eyes pinched with sadness. She buries her face in her hands. Later, Tom and Matt drive down a busy street in their convertible. Matt chews gum as he drives. Tom works his jaw. They spot a shapely blonde walking in a fur suit, cloche hat, and spectator pumps. Matt pulls over.
How goes it, babe?
The blonde's smoldering gaze studies the men and their long car. Tom smiles and flits his eyes to the back seat. The woman fingers her handbag and smiles, her eyes heavily rimmed with smoky eyeshadow. Tom beams and gets out.
Going south?
Yes. But I'm not accustomed to riding with strangers.
They stand eye to eye, and he takes her arm.
We're not going to be strangers. How far are you going?
Pretty far. Near Jackson Park.
He helps her into the car.
Is that out of your way?
Oh, no. My chauffeur's just crazy about long drives. Hey! Step on it, James.
Tom climbs in the back seat next to her.
Well, do I look good to you?
Sure do.
I feel flattered. You know, you're not the worst I've seen either.
He slides over closer to her and
smiles. From Chicago?
Not exactly. I came from Texas.
Where are you living?
The Congress Hotel.
If you're a stranger here, Tom and me will show you the town. Stick to your driving, mug.
The blonde laughs as Tom leans in closer. Later, Matt still drives the two of them. The blonde sits up.
Stay. You can let me off here. I'm going to meet my friends on the corner.
Okay.
They pull up to a curb, and Tom and the blonde get out. Tom leans on the open car door and faces her.
Would I see you again later?
I'd be happy to have you call me sometime.
Later today.
I'll think it over. Give me your phone number, and I'll call you.
All right, babe. Yards 3771.
Yards 3771. I'll remember. And in the meantime, thanks. My name's Gwen. Gwen Allen.
Mine's Tom Powers.
Yeah, mine is Matt.
He ain't got a name. Just a number.
As Gwen walks off, Tom tilts in a mock swoon against the car door, and he closes it. He stares after her. Matt grins. Tom spins around at a little dance step, opens the front passenger side door, and gets in next to Matt. Later.
Gee, she's a honey. I could go for her myself.
What do you mean you could go for yourself? You could go for an 80-year-old chick with rheumatism.
When are you going to see her?
She's going to call me.
Find out if she's got a friend.
What do you want with a friend? You got Mamie, ain't you? Ain't you going to kiss you, the baby?
Well, you got Kitty, ain't you?
Well, I ain't going to have her much longer. I'm fed up. You can tell us over me. Step on that gas, will you?
Later at a nightclub, couples in fancy dress foxtrot across a floor.
Max, George, quick.
A maitre d' greets Nails, Matt, Tom, and their dates.
Oh, Mr. Nathan, delighted to see you, Mr. Nathan.
How are you, Joe? How are you?
Fine, thank you, Mr. Nathan. Where would you like to sit, Mr. Nathan?
Where do I always sit? Right at the ringside.
Maybe fall up there. We can fix that, sir. Max, George, pick the table immediately at the railing for Mr. Nathan.
Great. The best is none too good tonight. This is a wedding celebration.
Really?
Yep. Matt's decided to take something lawful. A wife.
Well,
Well, that's something to celebrate about, isn't it?
I should say so.
Meet Mr. and Mrs. Doyle.
We're honored, I assure you.
Well, come on, let's dance while they're fixing the tables, huh?
This way, please.
He leads the elegantly dressed couples through a foyer into the dining area.
Hi, Dale.
Hello, Mr.
Hello,
Tom.
Hi, Mr. Nathan.
Hurry. Make your money?
Right this way, please.
Hello there, Dale.
Nail sweeps his date onto the dance floor. She wears a high-necked velvet coat lined in thick white fur. Tom pulls Gwen into a dance. Now, Matt and Mamie follow the maitre d' to their table on a raised level that circles the dance floor. As Nails and his partner glide gracefully in classic ballroom position, Mamie beams affectionately at Matt.
Are you as happy as I am, Matt?
Sure, honey.
You fellas don't know what it means to a girl, getting married.
Well, you knew all the time I was going to marry you, didn't you?
Of course I did. I was just thinking of Tom and Kitty.
Oh, well, that's different. I guess Tom ain't the marrying kind.
No, I guess not.
On the dance floor, Tom foxtrots with the platinum-haired Gwen, who wears a long satin gown. Tom peers over her shoulder and glimpses a nearby table where two men smoke cigarettes. He studies them. Recognizing Putty Nose, he clenches his mouth and stops dancing. Gwen looks up at him, questioningly. Tom smiles and resumes leading her around the floor. Later, in a lounge, Tom, Nails, and Matt sit with Patty Ryan at a table.
Are you sure that was old Putty Nose?
I ought to know him when I see him.
Sure you know. I suppose you'd like to put in with him again.
That's a faking to put something over on you, ain't it? I had to laugh when I heard about that. The guy's gonna get you again. He thinks you're soft.
He ain't gonna get me.
We don't want any part of it.
Well, I haven't got a thing to say, boys. But he got the Indian sign on you, Tom. He thinks you're a cinch.
And a pig's eye. That McGonagall ain't got a chance.
Tom sees Putty Nose standing to leave. He taps Matt on the shoulder and gestures with his hand. The guys rise to their feet just as Mamie and Gwen arrive at the table. Tom turns to Nails.
Take care of him, Nails.
You're not going out in a cold, dark night, are you?
Tom turns to Gwen.
Nails will see that you get home. We got a little job to do. Come on, Matt. That'll be a
pleasure. You're not going to leave me tonight, Matt.
As they face each other, Tom's face shows between them.
Well, there's something we forgot to do, honey. I'll be home later.
He kisses Mamie.
Come on.
The guys leave. Mamie hurries fretfully over to Nails.
Where's he going?
Oh, just walking around the block to cool themselves off. What are you worrying about? Sit down.
He guides her to a chair. Later, Putty Nose leaves the parking garage.
I'm already at 8 o'clock. Full of gas. I'm going on a long trip.
A black cat skitters across the sidewalk in front of him. As he passes a building, Tom and Matt descend a staircase and fall into step behind him. Putty Nose turns.
Well, if it ain't Tom Powers. And Matt, too. How are you, boys?
He offers his hand.
Been out of town?
Yeah, I was down home visiting.
Got a little drink for us, Putty?
Sure, Tom. But I can't let you in just now. You see,
I got a Jane inside.
I'll bring it right out to you.
Wait a minute, Putty Nose. We got words for you.
What's up, Tom?
We got a little business to settle. Jane or no Jane?
We ain't sore, are you, Tom? I've always been your friend.
Sure. You taught us how to cheat, steal, and kill. And then you lammed out on us.
Yeah, if it hadn't been for you, we might have been on the level.
Sure. We might have been ding-dings on a streetcar. Come on.
Tom and Matt each take one of Putty's arms and walk him upstairs to his apartment. Inside, Tom stands with Putty Nose as Matt enters from an adjoining room.
Jane, huh? There ain't no one here but him.
I thought so. Oh, you dirty double-crossing...
Tom slugs Putty Nose.
Jeez. Tommy, what are you squawking about? You got plenty more coming.
Gee. Tommy. Matt. What you gonna do? I don't want to die.
Oh. So you don't want to die?
Tommy, Don't you remember, you and Matt, how you used to be just kids and we were friends?
Putty drops to his knees.
You won't let him, Matt. I'll do anything for you from now on. Ain't you got a heart, Matty boy? Don't you remember how I used to play to you? And didn't I always stick up for you? I ain't got this coming.
Tom shoves him off with his foot.
Please, Matt, don't let him. Don't. I ain't a bad fellow, really. Oh, Tommy, don't. Ain't you got a heart? Oh, you won't let him, Matt, will you? You remember that song I used to sing? That song I taught you? You remember, Tommy? Back in the club, how you kids used to laugh at that song. Tell me, how long do I have to wait?
Standing behind Putty Nose, Tom pulls out a gun.
Or must I hesitate?
Matt paces.
Lizzie Jones, big and fat, slipped on the ice and broke her hat.
Matt stops by the door. Tom strides over.
I guess I'll call up Gwen. She ought to be home by now.
Tom gives Matt a friendly punch on the chest, then walks out. Matt stares uneasily across the room, clenching a fist at his side. Now, Ma Powers washes dishes in her kitchen. Tom enters and sits on the corner of the table. He smiles at her. As she turns, a grin spreads across her lips.
Oh, Tommy. Oh, let me make you a cup of tea.
Now, I gotta be getting back on a job in a minute, Ma.
Oh, my, but it's good to see you again. I was beginning to think I'd lost you.
Can't lose me that easy.
He nudges her on the chin with his fist. She nudges his chin.
Poor Michael. I'm afraid he's working himself into an early grave. Days on the car, school at night, and studying in between.
Well, listen, Ma. I came over to give you something. Here.
Tom takes out a wad of bills.
This. And when you need me more, just say so. I'm making plenty.
Oh, you're a good boy, Tommy, but I can't.
Take it.
Well, Mike wouldn't like it.
Mike ain't got nothing to say about it.
No?
Tom turns around and sees Mike behind him. The two men glare at each other.
Now listen to me, Tom. I've got something to say, and it's important.
Keep it to yourself. Nobody's asking you to stick your 2 cents in.
No, I don't want you two boys fighting. It ain't right for two brothers.
There ain't gonna be any fighting here, Ma. Only I don't need his preaching.
What is this, Ma?
Tommy gave it to me to buy some things with. Now, ain't that nice of him?
Don't you like it?
It's more than you can do. We don't want your money. I'm taking care of Ma.
On 2 bits a week.
Ma don't go to nightclubs, and she don't drink champagne.
Well, how do you know? I used to dance when I was a girl.
Now, listen, Tom. I ain't gonna argue with you, and I can't tell you all I'd like to in front of Ma. But get an earful of this. You ain't welcome in this house.
Oh, Michael.
That money's blood money, and we want no part of it.
Hide behind Ma's skirts, like always.
Better than hiding behind a machine gun.
Tom's gaze freezes. Ma looks on, meekly.
You're too smart. I'm going, Ma.
And don't forget your change.
Money don't mean nothing to me.
No, I guess not. But with no heart and no brains, it's all you've got. You'll need it.
Why, you sneaking steward.
Tom raises a fist, but Mike punches first, then stuffs the bills into Tom's hand. Tom rips the wad in half and whips them at Mike.
Tommy. Oh, Tommy.
Tom leaves, and Ma wrings her hands.
Oh, Michael. Why did you hit him?
She leans on Mike's shoulder. Later at the hotel.
I may leave town next week. You don't care, do you?
Gwen's drooping eyes look to Tom.
You know, when I first met you, I sort of figured you was on a make. Not much. You know what I mean. And besides that, I figured you was sort of different, too. That is, different from the kind of girls I was used to. Oh, I don't go in for these long-winded things, but with me, it was always yes or no. And I could never figure you out.
Now, can you?
No. But I guess I ain't your kind. I think you better call it quits.
Oh, don't be like that, Tommy. Of course I go for you, as you say. Maybe too much.
You know, all my friends, think that things are different between us than they are.
Yes?
They figure they know me pretty well, and they don't think I'd go for a merry-go-round.
Do you think I'm giving you a merry-go-round?
Well, no.
Then, Do you want things to be different? To please your boyfriend?
No, but... Hey, how long can a guy hold out? There goes Screwy.
How are you going?
I want to blow.
You're a spoiled boy, Tommy. You want things and you're not content until you get them. Well, maybe I'm spoiled, too. Maybe I feel that way, too. But you're not running away from me. Come here.
She points to a plush divan and he sits down. Gwen takes off Tom's hat, throws it aside, and sits on his lap, draping her chiffon-sleeved arm over his shoulder.
Now, you say put it, you know what that means.
She strokes his hair with her long painted nails and pulls his face into her chest.
Oh, my bashful boy. You are different, Tommy. Very different. And I've discovered it isn't only a difference in manner and outward appearances. It's a difference in basic character. The men I know, and I've known dozens of them, oh, they're so nice, so polished, so considerate. Most women like that type. I guess they're afraid of the other kind. I thought I was, too. But you're so strong. You don't give, you take. Oh, Tommy, I could love you to death.
They fall back onto the divan into a long kiss.
Oh, nuts.
They pull out of their embrace and Gwen gets up from his lap. She straightens the neckline of her chiffon top, then strolls to the door, the train of her flared satiny pants trailing behind. Matt comes in.
Tom here. Tom, nailed. Nails is dead.
Tom stares at Matt with a piercing gaze.
Who killed him? Nobody. His horse. He was thrown off in the park, kicked in the head.
Tom grabs his hat up from the floor and puts it on. The two men leave and Gwen stares after them. She stands for a moment, then sulks over to a low table covered with an assortment of bottles and glasses. The glittering trim on her satin and chiffon gown shimmers in the light. She stares at the table, flashes a dark glare at the door, then picks up a glass and throws it. Now, newspaper headlines read, Gangland buries its own. Nails Nathan's funeral stops traffic. Floral pieces amount to $75,000. Crowds line streets for blocks to witness passing of noted gangster. Now at the stables, three riders trot off as Tom and Matt approach wearing cutaway jackets and dress pants. They face a stable hand.
You got that horse at Chill Nails, Nathan?
You mean Roger? A bad animal. Terrible. Terrible.
Yeah, what's he worth?
Sprinted horse. I told Mr. Nathan not to ride him.
What's he worth?
Well, he could be bought for $1,000. You see, it's...
Never mind. Hey. Where's he at?
Tom hands the man some money.
Stall number three.
The guys walk toward the stall. The stable hand follows.
Stay where you are.
As they continue down the planked footway, the stable hand counts his money. Tom and Matt disappear into a stall. Tom and Matt reemerge. Tom carries a saddle blanket labeled with bold letters, Raja. He puts away his gun. Now headlines read, Gangland prepares for war. Death of Nails Nathan weakens Paddy Ryan's mob. Trouble brewing with Schemer Burns. Nighttime. A black convertible speeds down a street. Two men in the back light Molotov cocktails and throw them at a building marked Patrick J. Ryan's Bar. The facade blows outward in a spray of glass and splintering wood. People gather on the street and ogle the smoking storefront. Later, in the cluttered back room, Patty meets with Tom, Matt, and three others.
Right now, we ain't got a chance. Since Nails is gone, his mob is scattered. They're 10-1 against us. Look at this dump. 4 pineapples tossed at us in 2 days, and the brewery set fire. I'm telling you, they got us on the run. Not me. I ain't running. I ain't yelling.
Who said you was?
I ain't talking about that. I'm going to need you.
And you won't be no good to me when you're in the cemetery. I gotta have a couple of days to get the boys lined up again. When I'm done that, you're going to be where nobody knows where to find you except me.
Later, the men sit around a dining room table. Patty opens a satchel.
Come on, give me your guns and your money. All of it.
What are you trying to pull, Patty?
I'm going to keep you off the streets. Even you wouldn't be sap enough to go for a stroll without your gat. Come on, shower down.
The four men stare ahead for a moment. Then, one by one, pull out their pistols and hand them to Patty, who puts them in the satchel. Now they take out wads of cash. Matt starts to put some of his money back in his jacket.
All of it, all of it.
Patty grabs the remaining bills. A young woman brings a tray with shot glasses of dark liquor.
You got a phone here, Jane? I'm going to call Gwen.
No. You keep away from that phone. I'll call her up from the outside and tell her I had to send you out of town for a few days.
Yeah, and ring up Mamie, will you?
Leave it to me. This won't be for long, boys. I'll have the mob lined up again in a couple of days. Jane, you'll see that they're comfortable, eh?
You leave that to me, Patty.
Okay.
Jane reaches for the tray of glasses.
Gather round, boys. We're going to be a happy little family.
She runs her fingers along the back of Tom's neck.
Hope you got plenty of this medicine.
Now, in an alley, Patty warily pushes open one side of a garage door as he keeps a watchful eye toward the street. Carrying the satchel filled with the guy's money and guns, he opens the other door, then goes to a black motor car parked inside. Nearby, a short old man in a black suit peeks at him from a recessed doorway. He ducks back as the car passes, then watches as Patty drives off. His eyes follow Patty's car. Later, at a phone booth, the old man puts a coin in a slot.
Yards, 6321. Hello. Is Schema there?
The old man looks around. Now, at Patty's apartment, Jane sits with a bleary-eyed Tom.
Let me fix you another drink, Tommy.
You mean to say you got any of that stuff left?
Oh, you haven't drank so much.
Well, I can drink it as long as you can pour it.
Jane leans over Tom, pats his cheek, and cradles his chin in her palm. He lightly knocks her chin with his fist. He watches as she takes his glass. The racket draws Matt and two other gangsters from a card game in the adjoining room. The three stand alertly beside Jane as Tom stumbles drunkenly to the window and pulls back a curtain. On the street below, two workers stand at a chute behind a coal truck. Tom smiles, then staggers back to the group.
Only a coal truck. Had me going for a minute.
Come on, get in the game, will you, Tom?
No. I'm going to hit the hay.
On the street, one of the sooty coal workers leans against the truck and smokes. He gives a hand signal. Light filters into a room as window shades go up in an apartment across the street. Two hitmen ready machine guns mounted on stands. Each gun is aimed at the entrance to Patty's building. One hitman opens the window and both take their positions at the guns. Meanwhile, in a bedroom, Tom stands with his jacket off. Jane enters with a glass.
I thought you'd like a little nightcap, Tommy.
Wavering on his feet, he reaches for his jacket.
You don't need to feel ashamed in front of me, Tommy.
Yes.
Let me help you.
She takes his jacket, then removes his loosened tie.
I don't need any help.
Be a good boy and sit down.
His head wobbles as she pushes him onto the bed and unbuttons his shirt.
I'll take your shoes off, too. I want to do things for you, Tommy.
She leans over him and lifts his chin with her hand.
You don't think I'm old, do you, Tommy?
No.
You like me, don't you, Tommy?
Sure.
She takes his face in her hands and kisses him. He pushes her away, his head bobbing.
What's the idea?
Just a good night kiss for a fine boy.
She runs her hand through his hair, then walks toward the door. Morning. At a table set for breakfast, Jane lays out napkins. Tom trudges in wearing a pinstriped suit.
Breakfast is all ready, Tommy.
I ain't hungry. Give me some coffee, will you? And make it black.
Smiling, she eyes Tom slyly.
You aren't sorry, are you?
Sorry? Sorry for what?
For last night.
What do you mean, for getting drunk?
Aren't you the little play actor?
Tom holds a steaming cup of coffee to his lips, then stops and stares at the smiling hostess. He puts down the cup.
Wait a minute. Do you mean it?
She covers his lips. His face twists into a grimace.
Why, you...
He slaps her and storms into the living room.
Hey, Tom, where are you going?
Home.
But Patty...
I don't care what Patty said. I'm getting out of this dump.
He grabs his hat and marches out. Matt throws Jane a look, grabs his hat, and follows. Now the two hitmen watch as Tom and Matt step into the daylight.
Hey, Tom, wait a minute.
Oh, nothing. I just got burned up, that's all.
What do you want to run out on me for? We're together, ain't we?
Tom knocks Matt's chin playfully with his fist.
Sure.
They start down the street. They drop to a crouch, then smile as they see the workers at the coal truck. Across the street, the two hitmen aim their guns. Matt arches stiffly and rolls to the ground. He reaches out for Tom. As Tom ducks into an alley, gunfire pulverizes the corner masonry of a building. Now the hitmen flee, and bystanders crowd around Matt's limp body. Tom peeks around a wall and looks at his friend. Blood streams from Matt's mouth as a policeman kneels over him. Tom clenches his jaw and backs away. Now at a pawn shop, a smiling shopkeeper greets Tom.
Yes, sir? I was just looking at some of them pistol things in the window.
Shall I show you some?
Yeah. I kind of like that big one.
That one?
Mm.
All right.
The shopkeeper fetches a revolver. Tom pushes the barrel away.
What do you call that?
That's a .38 caliber. Oh, it's a fine...
You got any more like it?
Well, I've got some smaller ones.
No, same size.
Sure.
The shopkeeper fetches another. While he's gone, Tom's smile fades, then returns.
How do you load that?
First, you break it. Then you stick the cartridges in the holes.
Could I see?
Sure.
Tom pulls some bullets from his pocket and loads the chamber.
That's right.
Like that?
Yes.
Tom loads it with four bullets.
It'll hold six.
Oh, this'll be enough.
Tom points the loaded gun.
Stick 'em up.
The clerk grins.
Stick 'em up.
The shopkeeper's eyes widen. He raises both hands as Tom takes the second gun and backs away. Later, rain falls outside a glassed-in lobby. A lettered window reads Western Chemical Company, and a man smokes inside. Outside, Tom leans against a lamppost, the pounding rain drenching his hat and suit. As two cars pull up to the lobby, he ducks down. Several men gather on the sidewalk. As the guy waiting inside opens the door, the men turn and look around.
Okay, schemer, it's all set.
Holding an umbrella, the trench-coated schemer heads indoors. Tom watches from a stairwell across the street as the men file in behind Schemer. The cars drive off. Tom straightens in the downpour. Raindrops pelt the brim of his soaked hat. As the last of Schemer's thugs go inside, Tom stares, his eyes sparkling. His mouth lifts into a wicked grin. He purses his lips and starts across the street. Tom keeps his hands stuffed in his pockets and his gaze fixed straight ahead. His mouth clenches as he takes step after step. Misty breaths puff from his nose. Tom reaches the lobby, pushes open the door, and disappears into a second door inside. Tom staggers back out through the lobby, holding a pistol in each hand. He leans against the door jamb. He stumbles into the rainy street, hunching over, and falls to his knees on the wet pavement. Tom struggles to his feet and throws the guns through the lobby windows. The rain pelting down, Tom falls onto the curb, then pushes himself back up with his hands. He staggers a few steps and collapses again. A dark stream of blood seeps down his face from under his hat. Tom sways on his knees, his wet jacket collar pulled up around his neck. His head bobs weakly.
I ain't so tough.
He drops face down in the gutter. Now in a hospital room, Tom lies in bed, his head wrapped in gauze. Patty and a doctor leave the room as Tom's family approaches.
Well, Doc, what do you think?
Can't say.
Well, we'll hope for the best. Doctor, this is Tom's mother, brother, and Miss Doyle.
You can go in for a few moments, Mrs. Powers.
Thank you.
As Ma Powers, Michael, and Molly enter Tom's room, a nurse leaves. They approach the bedside, and Ma Powers leans over her sleeping son.
Tommy, boy, do you know me?
Tom's eyes flicker open, and he slowly turns his head. He slides his fingers down the blanket and takes his mother's hand.
Sure, Ma.
Mike's here. He's come to see you.
Mike sits on the bed and takes Tom's other hand.
Hello, Mike.
How are you, Tom? Old Scott?
Hey. I've been wanting to see you.
You're going to be seeing a lot of me, Tom.
There's something I wanted to say to you, Mike. I'm sorry.
Sorry for what?
Just sorry. You know.
Oh, Tommy. You and Mike are going to be friends again?
Sure. Friends.
Oh, boy. I'm so happy.
You must like Mike a lot better than me.
No, no, Tommy boy. You're my baby.
Sure.
He touches his mother's cheek lightly with his fist.
I'm your baby.
You're coming home. Ain't you, Tommy? To stay?
Sure. Coming home. Maybe. If I can never get out of here.
But you're going to get out of here all right, Tom.
Why, of course you are. You're going to get well and strong. Both my boys back. All of us together again. Oh, I'm almost glad this happened.
Her eyes pool with tears, and she buries her face in Tom's hand. Mike and Molly look on solemnly. Grinning weakly, Tom takes his fist and lightly taps his mother's head. Later, at the Powers house, Ma cheerfully sets a table with Molly as Mike reads at a desk.
And he really looked better today, did he, Micah?
Sure, Ma. A lot better. He was sitting up. I told him you'd be to see him tomorrow.
And he'll be coming home soon, won't he?
Sure, Ma.
Ma toddles toward the kitchen, smiling. Mike returns to his open book. Mike walks over to the front door and opens it. Patty Ryan stands at the entrance, stone-faced.
Oh, Patty, come in.
Patty jerks his head toward the porch, leads Mike out, and closes the front door.
What's wrong? Is Tom...
They kidnapped him from the hospital this afternoon.
What? Who did?
Must have been the Burns mob. First they give it to him in the back, then they take him when he's helpless. Who knows what they're doing to him now?
But they ain't going to get away with this.
I'm doing all I can. My boys are out in the street now. I'll bring Tom back if it's the last thing I do.
I'm gonna...
You're gonna... stay here. At that phone and take messages. I told my boys to call you up if they find anything.
Well, I'd like to smash...
Listen. I sent word to Burns that if he'd bring Tom back here tonight, I'd quit the racket. He could have it all. I'd leave town and I won't come back.
You think they'll do it?
It's a sweet offer. You stay here. You hear anything from any one of my boys, call me at my place. I gotta get back on the job.
Paddy leaves. Mike stares after him. He flexes his fist and heads inside. Later, a woman's hand sets the needle of a phonograph onto a 78 record. At the dinner table, Mike stares, his brow furrowed in thought.
Don't you like your dinner?
What? I just ain't hungry, Ma. I'll get it, Ma.
Mike rushes to the telephone in the front hall.
Yeah? This is Mike. When? You are? Fine. Ma, they're bringing Tom home.
They are? When?
Right now, he's on his way.
Is he all right?
Well, he must be. They wouldn't be bringing him home.
Oh, it's wonderful. I'll get his room ready. I knew my baby would come home. Who called, Mike?
One of Patty's boys, I guess. Didn't say who. Oh.
Mommy, dear?
Yes, Mother?
Bring up some clean sheets out of the linen closet. Hurry, dear.
All right.
Upstairs, Ma cheerfully plumps pillows in Tom's room. Mike paces downstairs. Mike opens the door, then steps back in horror. It's Tom, tied in a blanket, swaying on his feet. His dull eyes stare blankly, his head shrouded in blood-stained gauze. His body falls face down onto the dusty carpet. Mike crouches down, then glances upstairs. In Tom's room, Ma joyfully changes pillowcases. Downstairs, Mike's hand falls away from his brother's body. As he stares into the distance, his breathing grows shallow. He walks slowly into the living room, his feet dragging through each step. On the phonograph, the metal pipe-like arm holding the needle slides to the end of the record. Words appear. The end of Tom Powers is the end of every hoodlum. The public enemy is not a man, nor is it a character. It is a problem that sooner or later we, the public, must solve. Fade to black.